It was a wonderful welcome. I appreciate it. Thank you, Kendall, for the standing ovation. I appreciate that. My daughter is always showing love to me. Everybody give a hand for Kendall. Thanks, Kendall. So, for those who don't know me, I was the junior high pastor here for almost 18 years, and then they kicked me out about a year ago. So now I'm the local outreach pastor, and I teach in big church, usually once a month. But Dave's speaking up there today, so I get to do the second week of our Proverbs series. So last week, Dave kicked that off. If you weren't here, we started in Proverbs chapter 1. So if you have your Bibles, you can go ahead and turn there to Proverbs chapter 1. We'll be starting in verse 8. So this is what Proverbs is: someone speaking like a prophet into the lives of young people. Dave talked last week where this book was actually written for young people, like your age. Like, there's not a lot of books in the Bible you can say that about, but this in particular was written for younger people, showing them that this is how life works. When we're young, we believe the rules don't apply to us, and we think we can defy ultimate reality and get away with it. And I love this quote from last week from Tim Keller. It says, "Wisdom is making the right choice even when there are no clear moral laws telling you explicitly what to do." So oftentimes you are in situations where you're just not sure. You're not sure which way to go, which decision to make, and wisdom gives you the opportunity, the ability to make choices that are wise and not foolish. So that's what we're going to look at today, starting in verse 8. So I'm not sure if my version matches up with you guys, my ESVs at home. So I'll read these. And we'll check it out. And on the screen, I'm sure they'll be correct, the correct version, I guess. So as a matter of fact, let me just read them off there. "Hear, my son, your father's instructions, and forsake not your mother's teaching, for they are a graceful garland for your head and pendants for your neck." That's kind of an interesting way to put it. Now, actually, just recently, a young lady in the audience got a license and got a car. And she's close to my heart. I mentioned her standing ovation earlier. But she likes to decorate things. And the back seat of the car has garland on it. It's like literally colorful tinsel like you would put on a Christmas tree. It's fabulous. You get in that car and it's like there's a party going on. There's a Ken doll for some reason. I'm not sure why. There's Squishmallows and lots of fun things, right? Well, here this garland is mentioned. It's like, wisdom and teaching from your parents is like that. Some of you look at wisdom and teaching from your parents as nothing to do with a party, nothing to do with anything exciting. It's actually really boring, and I wish they would stop talking, right? Well, Solomon's saying something different. He's saying, hey, if you have a godly parent, you should be thankful. If you have a godly parent, you should be really excited that God put someone like that that would care enough to put up with your stuff, right? And your emotions and the ups and downs of life as an adolescent. And he's saying here, look, they're here as a gift. You don't see it now, but maybe if you just open your eyes just a little to what they go through, maybe you can actually see your parents, if they're godly parents, as a gift. There are a lot of young people in this country, in this world, that would love to have the parents you probably have. And so for that, he's saying, here's a reminder here, it's better to be thankful. God has placed them in your life for a reason. And then we move on to verse 10. He goes into this, he kind of goes off on the fact that temptation is all around. It's all around us. And verse 10, he says, "My son, if sinners entice you, don't consent. If they say, 'Come with us,' let us lie in wait for blood. Let us ambush the innocent without reason like Sheol. Let us swallow them alive and whole like those who go down to the pit. We shall find all precious goods. We shall fill our houses with plunder. Throw in your lot among us. We will have all that we need. My son, do not walk in the way with them. Hold back your foot from their paths, for their feet run to evil, and they make haste to shed blood. For in vain is a net spread in the sight of any bird, but these men lie in wait for their own blood. They set an ambush for their own lives. Such are the ways of everyone who is greedy for unjust gain. It takes away the life of its possessors." So this passage speaks specifically about thieves, who try to convince someone else that their way is a great career path. What's going on here? You got your phone along with the lesson? Okay, good. Just checking. Somebody got a phone, and I'm just checking in on his phone. So it's kind of an interesting passage. It's like there's a bunch of thieves, and these thieves are trying to convince other people to jump in with them and ambush people. Like back then, I guess that's what they did. You guys do different stuff for fun, but back then it's like, hey guys, let's ambush people. Let's rob them. Let's get rich. As Owen, my 10-year-old, would say, let's get wrench. That's what he used to say. Get wrench. I'm going to be wrench someday. And so here, this is like the scene that's being painted, but you got to look deeper than just what's being offered to see what the lesson is. It's not just about like Philip recruiting you for his gang to go rob people at the high school in the morning or afternoon as they go to their car. That's not the idea. There's a deeper meaning here. So he's talking about greed. Solomon explains that greed is all-consuming sin that will literally wreck your life. Paul wrote 1 Timothy as an encouragement to Timothy. Timothy was actually your age. Another book that was actually, there's like maybe a few books that were written to young people, and we're talking about two of them today. 1 Timothy was a letter that Paul wrote to his young son in the faith, who was probably, theologians guess that he was about 15 years old when this was written to him. So Paul is talking to Timothy, and he's challenging him and encouraging him when it comes to greed. And he says in verse 6 through 10 of chapter 6, but godliness with contentment is great gain, for we brought nothing into the world. We can't take anything out of the world. But if we have food and clothing, with these we will be content. But those who desire to be rich fall into temptation, into a snare, into many senseless and harmful desires that plunge people into ruin and destruction. For the love of money is a root of all kind of evil. It is through this craving that some have wandered away from the faith and pierced themselves with many pangs. It's kind of an interesting way to put it. So is he saying here that stuff is bad? That money is evil? That new things are horrible for you? I don't think that's what he's saying. There's a key word there. What's the key word in that passage? The blank of money. What? Love. The love of money. I keep getting like 800 texts. I think it's the fantasy football app. I'm so distracted. My nieces and nephews are in this fantasy football group. And apparently it's just blowing up right now. It just buzzing me. I'll tell you about it later. Anyway, the love of money. The love, that's the key. The love of stuff. Some of you are obsessed with stuff. And according to this passage, you're in sin. You got that? If you're obsessed with stuff and you think the stuff will make you happy and you put all your happiness and joy and potential in the things or the money, then according to this passage, that you are discontented and living in sin. And so Paul is challenging him here, and Solomon is challenging the readers in Proverbs. Look, focusing on greed, being focused on that, is going to drive you down a path that destroys you. So some of you might be saying, I don't really feel like I struggle with greed, though. See, greed and envy, though, they often go hand in hand, so we can see that greed and envy are very similar. Look at, I think we have a slide of the definitions of the two, or a description of the two. Greed emerges when people compare themselves to others who have more, leading to a desire to match or surpass them. Envy arises when individuals compare themselves to those who possess what they desire, resulting in feelings of inadequacy and resentment. Sounds very similar. So either way, when we want what other people have, like for example, I would say back in the day when I was playing basketball, we all wanted to get the same shoes, you know, the same sneakers. And back then they were different than now, although they did have Jordans. I'm not that old. But Jordans were actually, it was just like, I mean, Jordan came out, it was like in 1980 something. And so for me, my dad was like this. He's got four kids. He's a pastor, so he doesn't have a ton of money. So he's like, I'm going to give you this much money, and you have to add whatever you want to get to the amount that these sneakers cost. And so I saw other people, like my friends are like, my parents don't make me, you know, their parents don't make me them do that. You know, they just pay for their stuff. And in my mind, just like my kids at times, I'm not going to point any of them out like I already did today, maybe later. But sometimes that happens, right? Well, so-and-so got this or so-and-so, blah, and you're just in this mode of envy, which is really ultimately greed. And it's all about your stuff, and you're disappointed or upset or even further ticked because you don't have what they have. You're not afforded the things that someone else just gets dropped in their lap. And oftentimes that's a struggle, and for you, that is a good identifier that you struggle with greed, that you struggle with envy, and it's something that you have to deal with between you and God. Kind of a little side note, I think we got a picture of some Jordans. I got sidetracked. Sometimes I do that. I'm 50 years old. I just turned 50 last week. I know that's really old to you. You'll be there someday, hopefully. But I got distracted. I'm doing research for this study, and I got on the idea of sneakers, and then I got on the idea of Jordans, and then I got down this rabbit trail on Google, and it brought me to these shoes, which were the Last Dance shoes that are signed, and they're worth $2.2 million. So there's also some gold Jordans that are worth more than that, but those are like the real Jordans, worth the most in all of the Jordans out there. So you can all be jealous and greedy that you don't have $2.2 million worth of Jordans right there. All right, moving on to what we're talking about. Next slide. C.S. Lewis says this, just really powerful statement about greed and what we're going after. Human history is a long, terrible story of man trying to find something other than God which will make him happy. Now, I mentioned that I've been a youth pastor. I've been a youth pastor for 25 years. So I've watched so many young people come through. And even you, like over here, I'm standing over here, like during worship, I'm like, why are all these guys taller than me? This is just crazy, just watching people grow, just watching them grow. And that's just what you do as a youth pastor. But as they get out and as they go on to do their thing, whatever it is, unfortunately, I have this sad opportunity to look at lives that are built on things besides God, and they just destroy themselves. Or they just live this life, this monotonous life of no joy. And they're chasing stuff, and they're joyful for about a week or two because they just got a new car, or they just went for their first year of school, and that's exciting. But every time they chase something that's not associated with God, and they chase at that for fulfillment, they just get dropped right back down to monotony and boredom. And so we're called to something more here. Verse 11 says, but as for you, O man, verse 11 of 1 Timothy 6, Paul doesn't leave Timothy hanging in the negative. He gives him something positive. He said, as for you, O man of God, he's talking to Timothy, flee these things, flee the desires for desiring after the stuff. But instead, what command does he give him? Pursue righteousness, godliness, faith, love, steadfastness, gentleness. There it is. You as a young person, this is written to a 15-year-old. What are you called to do? What is my mission in life? Here it is. If you want action steps, there it is. Paul is giving them to Timothy, and he's giving them to you as well. Pursue these things. Now, all these other things the scriptures say, these other things will be added to you, meaning you'll have what you need as you pursue Jesus. You're not going to go hungry. You're not going to have, you know, there may be times where you got a shoe with a hole in it, then you might have to buy another pair of shoes, but it's not like you're going to go be running around barefoot. God's going to provide your needs, but it's all in perspective of pursuing this first, all right? So this goes into Psalm 1, and I don't have time to read the whole psalm, but I'll just summarize it for you. One of my favorite psalms, Psalm 1, verse 1 through 3 gives this example, and I've used this before from up there in the big church. The idea is this. He gives these downward progression of sin, similar to what's happening here to this young man who's going to get enticed by robbers to just pillage people in their time. But here's the downward progression. What happens is you walk around the ungodly. So you may be at school, your neighborhood, whatever, and you know the people that you probably shouldn't be hanging out with or probably shouldn't be involved with. You walk around, and you're kind of around them for a little bit. And you kind of let yourself kind of stop a little. And then what happens? You stand. You, instead of walking by them, those who would entice you, those who tempt you toward ungodliness, instead of just continuing to walk by, it gets enticing. And what do? You stop. And so then you start kind of getting in on the conversation, getting in on whatever is happening that's pulling you away from Jesus, and so you stand. And before you know it, it's a prophecy, Psalm 1, read it later, it's saying you sit. You're walking around it, you stand, and then before you know it, you're sitting right in the middle of it, and you're more comfortable than you've ever been in the middle of sin. And now that could be, I'm talking about friends, but it could also be online. Your behavior with your phones. These things could be full of deadly poison for your mind and your eyes. The things you watch. So we're not just talking about friendship here. We're talking about a deadly path for what you allow your eyes to see. And many of you, I know, struggle with that right now. And you're like, ooh, is he talking to me? Please don't stop and stare at me. But it's a reality. I mean, it's just true. I could talk to anybody and be like, yep, you struggle with it. Yep, I'm not pointing at anybody. Oh, hide my face. But it's just true. And you have to take it seriously. Because if you don't take it seriously, it's going to kill you spiritually. There's a great quote from John Stott. It's not in my notes, but it says, be killing sin or sin will be killing you. Might want to write that down. Get it tattooed on your arm so you can see it every day or something. Don't tell your parents that Tim told you to get a tattoo. I don't want emails. Genesis 4, 6, and 7 says this, if you do well, will you not be accepted? If you do not do well, sin is crouching at the door. Its desire is contrary to you, but you must rule over it. God said that to Cain right before he murdered his brother. He gave Cain a warning. The first two sons in all of history, he gave Cain a warning and said, hey, sin is crouching at your door. It wants to devour you. Cain had an opportunity to hear that warning and he ignored it. And he went on to murder his brother Abel. Peter echoes this warning. 1 Peter 5:7, be sober-minded, be watchful. Your adversary, the devil, prowls around like a roaring lion seeking someone to devour. But wisdom gives you discernment. I don't normally talk to young people without mentioning this passage, Romans 12, 1 and 2. If you've heard me talk, you've probably heard me read it a million times. If you don't have this memorized, you might want to memorize it. Write it on a piece of paper, put it on your mirror, put it on post-it notes everywhere you go, put it in your cars if you have one, put it wherever. Romans 12, 1 and 2 needs to become a passion for you. I appeal to you, therefore, by the mercies of God, to present your bodies as a living sacrifice, holy and acceptable to God, which is your spiritual worship. Do not be conformed to the world, but be transformed by the renewal of your mind, that by testing you may discern what is the will of God, the good and acceptable and perfect will. Some of you are struggling. What does God want me to do? What am I supposed to do with my life? What am I supposed to do in this situation? I'm struggling here. I'm not sure about this. I don't know. I got all these wonders and worries and fears and anxieties. What do I do? What do I do? What do I do? Memorize Romans 12, 1 and 2. Make it your mission. You start presenting your body as an act of worship to God. A lot of these things that you struggle with will fade away. Whether it is pornography, whether it is sleeping with someone, whether it is drinking, whether it is drugs, whatever it is, or even these little sins, we call them little sins, but they're all the same. Gossip, being angry. All these things are things that are a symptom of the bigger problem, and the bigger problem is we don't offer our bodies as living sacrifices to God on a daily basis. So all these things just eat us up. All these things just show us where we're at. But the solution is here, to offer our bodies as a living sacrifice every day. Then we can know the answer to these problems or these issues or your future. What does my future hold? Offer your body as a living sacrifice every day. God will guide you. Maybe he won't give you the big picture. If I had the big picture of what I was going to do, I'd never imagine myself standing on a stage in Texas. I grew up in Philadelphia. I didn't even know what Texas was. All I knew back then was just big hair and like a bunch of weird Cowboys fans. That's pretty much it. I never imagined myself here, living here for like 20-some years. But this is where God had me and where he put me, and I love it. But it's slowly doing this, and we got to move along and get done here. Verse 20, chapter 1, he says, wisdom is calling. Wisdom cries aloud in the street and the market. She raises her voice at the head of the noisy street. She cries out at the entrance of the city gates. She speaks, how long, O simple ones, will you love being simple? How long will scoffers delight in their scoffing and fools hate knowledge? Last verse there, 23, if you turn at my reproof, behold, I will pour out my spirit to you. I will make my words known to you. So wisdom is accessible for you. Proverbs 2:6, for the Lord gives wisdom. From his mouth comes knowledge and understanding. So God doesn't have an actual mouth, right? I mean, unless you see like cartoons, you know, from the clouds, you know, that he's speaking. So what is God's voice? How do you know what his mouth is saying? This isn't rhetorical. How do you know? Just give me the church answer. What is it? The Bible. Thank you. The B-I-B-L-E, just like the Impact kids would say, right? The Bible. It sounds really basic. You want the mouth of God. You want the words of God. Start reading the Bible. Inspirational quotes are amazing, but the Bible is where it's at, to know his word, to know his heart, to know what he wants. And then he talks about the simple. I served what would be called the simple for 25 years. You're like, hey, don't get offended. I'm talking about middle school. Some of you were just there, so you're probably still simple. But junior high is full of, and no offense to them, it's just where they're at, right? They're just simple. It's life is simple. It's just the way it is. And now you're in high school, you're like, you kids just wait till you get in my spot, you know? And you're like, you're there now, and you got all the anxieties that they never had. That's simple. But you don't want to just stay in simple. Your life isn't meant to just be simple. That's just so boring, and just it's not what you're meant for. But here's the simple, blindly going into situations. I didn't know they were going to be doing that. That's simple. I didn't know there would be alcohol there. Yes, you did. I didn't know those pictures would be on my screen. Yeah, you did. You're the one that clicked on them. That's simple. Blindly going into situations, that's just not an excuse. Grow up. It's time to stop being simple. Not making a plan of escape. Some of you go to places and you go to things and you get stuck there. But maybe you need a plan of escape as a young person to say to someone in accountability, saying, hey, I'm going to call you or I'm going to text you. Then you're going to call me and you're going to get me out of this situation so that I can leave without looking like an idiot, but I can still be able to have my integrity and my Christian faith and my testimony. Some of you need to set that up. And then believing lies that the world offers, that's being simple. Believing that looking a certain way will make you feel better. Wearing these certain clothes or being with these certain people will make you feel better and will fulfill you. That's simple. God offers you something way better than that. Wisdom is given in abundance. James 1:5 says, if any of you lacks wisdom, let him ask God, who gives generously to all without reproach. And then 24 to 31, man, he goes off, and we're not going to take a lot of time here because it's all to say one thing. He says, I've called you, and you refuse to listen. I've stretched out my hand, and no one has heeded. Because you ignored all my counsel and have none of my reproof, I also will laugh at your calamity. I will mock when terror strikes you. When terror strikes you like a storm and your calamity comes like a whirlwind, when distress and anguish come upon you, then you will call me, but I will not answer. They will seek me diligently, but will not find me, because they hated knowledge and didn't choose the fear of the Lord, would have none of my counsel and despised all my reproof. Therefore, they shall eat the fruit of their way and have their fill of their own devices. Wow. What a rough place to be. To be at a point where you ignored God so much, ignored his call of wisdom on your life, where it's just like, they're just released to go follow their passions. Unfortunately, I've seen that in my own life and in the lives of my friends that have walked destructive paths. There's a young man that was in our Christian school. I went to Christian school back in the day. And it's a small school, and this young man came out of a single mom. And he did great in the school. He even went down to Virginia to work, got away from his friends. One of those things where it's like he knew he needed to get away from these people that were drug addicts and just partying every weekend. So he got away to live with his brother down in Virginia. Well, he was going to go back to celebrate his birthday back to Philadelphia, and just wanted to hang out with his old friends for the weekend. And his brother was like, hey, his brother did what this passage said. Wisdom's calling. Wisdom's saying, stay here. Wisdom says there's nothing for you back there. But Tony had a different idea. He's like, I just want to catch up with them. He ends up at a party. He ends up going back to the level of drugs that he had been doing. And that evening, his mom didn't know where he was. He never came home. He had gotten into a car. They dropped him off because he was going to walk to his mom's apartment. They found him the next day leaning up against the fence, and he was dead. Tony had all the opportunities. He was like a living example of this passage. He had all the warnings. He had all the people trying to help him, even his brother saying, don't go there, just stay, hang out, we'll celebrate your birthday here. He had every opportunity to know Jesus, yet he chose a different path. That sounds very dramatic. That's not a made-up story. Some pastors make up stories. I graduated with his brother, and he was a little younger than us. That's just a warning to say, look, wisdom's calling your name. Wisdom is in the form of sometimes your parents. Wisdom's in the form of your youth leaders. Wisdom's in the form of other people around you, your teachers and coaches, and even your friends, some of them. Some of them, I wouldn't listen to them at all. But wisdom's calling, but when you ignore it, you're just heading for destruction. Lastly, last two verses, it's time to choose your path. It says, for the simple are killed by their turning away, and the complacency of fools destroys them. But whoever listens to me will dwell secure and will be at ease without dread of disaster. Solomon gives you a choice. Don't be a fool. Don't be simple. Psalm 19:7, the law of the Lord is perfect, reviving the soul. The testimony of the Lord is sure, making wise the simple. There's a quote, I don't know if I put it up there, but we'll skip that. I'm just going to give you these last two things. Habits are made now. Practices are developed now. If you have a phone, take a picture of this. Habits are made now. Practices are developed now. And commitments are forged now. If you sit there and say to me, well, one day I'll follow Jesus. One day I'll really get crazy about God. One day I'll really jump in with both feet and I'll offer my body as a living sacrifice. You're just developing habits now to head toward destruction down the road. This is the time. You're not promised tomorrow. Today's the day to make habits toward godliness. Psalm 23:6. When you do choose the path that honors God, there's the result. Surely goodness and mercy will follow me all the days of my life, and I will dwell in the house of the Lord forever. There's nothing better than that. There is no future better than that right there. So I'm going to pray, and you guys can get to your discussions. God, we thank you for our time together. Pray you bless our time as we discuss this further. Just convict these students of their need to make their body a living sacrifice every day. In your name we pray. Amen. All right, you can head to your discussions. Thanks. Appreciate it.